welcome to another episode of Turkey Book Talk. I'm William Armstrong. In this podcast, I speak to authors about newly released books on Turkey and its neighbourhood. Subscribe through iTunes, Podbean, Stitcher or Acast. Like the Facebook page or follow the Twitter account at Turkey Book Talk. And check out show notes and other links at armstrongwilliam.wordpress.com. You can directly support this podcast by taking advantage of a special offer for Turkey Book Talk listeners, courtesy of Hearst Publishers. In that deal, you can get a 33% discount plus free delivery on any one of five great books published by Hearst. Check it out via the address hearstpublishers.bigcartel.com. That's hearstpublishers.bigcartel.com. Purchasing through that deal is cheaper than Amazon, and most importantly for me, it helps support this podcast. Titles included on the list are written by authors who have featured on previous episodes of Turkey Book Talk. They include The Circassian, A Life of Eşref Bey, Late Ottoman Insurgent and Special Agent by Benjamin Fortner, The New Turkey and Its Discontents by Simon Waldman and Emre Çalışkan, The Poisoned Well, Empire and Its Legacy in the Middle East by Roger Hardy, Out of Nowhere, The Syrian Kurds in Peace and War by Michael Gunter, and Jihad and Death, The Global Appeal of Islamic State by Olivier Roy. To order any of those titles for a third off plus free delivery, visit hearstpublishers.bigcartel.com and help support Turkey Book Talk. Another way to support if you enjoy or benefit from this podcast is through my Patreon account, which lets you make a small or large pledge on a per episode basis. The standard pledge is $3 per episode, but you can contribute as much or as little as you want, and you can find details of that Patreon account through all the Turkey Book Talk pages. But now on with this latest episode, in which we speak to Ekin Oklap. She's the English translator of the latest novel by Orhan Pamuk, the winner of the Nobel Literature Prize in 2006. The book is called The Red-Haired Woman, and it's just been published in English by Faber & Faber as the second Pamuk novel that Ekin has translated since taking over from his longtime collaborator Maureen Freely. The first of Pamuk's novels that she translated was A Strangeness in My Mind, a mammoth 600-page tome about the life of a poor Istanbul street seller that was published back in 2015. The Red-Haired Woman is a much slimmer work, which centres on the relationship between a traditional well digger and his young apprentice. The well digger Mahmut takes on his apprentice Cem after being commissioned by a textile merchant to find water in a 2-acre plot earmarked for a new factory outside Istanbul. They build up a close relationship, but after weeks of digging without success, Cem develops an obsession with a ragtag travelling theatre group and its enigmatic leading lady. Tragedy then occurs when he drops a heavy bucket onto Mahmut, after which he runs away in panic, with his master wounded, possibly dead, at the bottom of the well. What follows is a psychologically complex work, full of references to the ancient Greek myth of Oedipus and the medieval Persian story in which Rostam unknowingly murders his son, Sohrab. Later in this conversation with Ekin Oklap, we discuss some of the technical as well as political difficulties in translating Pamuk, but I started by asking her how she got the job in the first place.
I'm a literary agent, actually. I work at the agency that represents Orhan. Back a few years ago, quite soon after I started, my boss, who's Orhan's agent, said that he was looking for a new translator, and because I happen to be Turkish, he asked me to help out. And I suggested that amongst others, he might also consider me. So that's how that came about. I did a sample and Orhan liked it, and it went on from there.
And did you have a background in translating before? Is it something that you'd always wanted to do, or was it something kind of out of the blue?
I don't have a background in translating. I've never studied it, and I'd never really done it before. But I speak three languages. It's a bit of an accident. I was born in Turkey but grew up in Italy, so as well as Turkish and English, I also speak Italian. So I sort of feel that, in a way, I've translated things all my life, but in a very different, much less difficult context, of course, which is the day-to-day context. But, you know, it's the idea of translating a thought into another language or translating a text into another language is not something that's ever been far from my life.
Ah, so that's why Skype says Milan. Now I understand.
Although I'm in London, actually. But
so do you live in London, or are you based in Istanbul? Or?
No, I live in London.
Okay. And The Red-Haired Woman, which has just been published in English and the release is ongoing at the moment, it's the second Pamuk novel that you've translated after A Strangeness in My Mind. Could you just kind of compare the two experiences? Obviously, this latest novel is slightly shorter, a lot shorter. It's half the length, really. But what was the experience like on working on both of those books?
Well, first of all, I should say I also translated a catalogue that 6 years ago, maybe? It's called The Innocence of Objects.
Ah, yes, about the museum.
Yes, exactly. And that was, again, a very short text in comparison to Suze in My Mind, and also a very different kind of text from both of the novels. In terms of comparing the last sort of the two novels, of course, as you point out, one of them is half the length of the other, and actually that translated almost exactly to the amount of time it took to translate them. So I took 4 months to translate just Suze in My Mind, 4 months and a couple of weeks extra, actually, and 2 months to do The Red-Haired Woman. They're also very different books, apart from the length. Strangers in My Mind is Dickensian, almost, full of detail, in a way that The Red-Haired Woman is only in part. So the level of detail in Strangers in My Mind, it represents a different sort of challenge. But then again, The Red-Haired Woman has had its own challenges. It's more philosophical in a way. It's, I suppose you could consider parts of it a thought experiment, almost. So it's an entirely different kind of book. You also, having read A Strangers in My Mind, you'll know that it contains a multitude of characters to sort of, you know, pop up throughout the narrative. The Red-Haired Woman has that to a lesser extent, but even so, it has three distinct parts which are very different from each other, but at the same time are part of a sort of wider whole. So in some ways the two books are very different for a translator to work on, but at the same time some of the peculiarities are in a way shared. So the multitude of voices in A Strangers in My Mind is not too different, I suppose, from the multitude of perspectives that you get in The Red-Haired Woman.
And just talk a bit about the translation process. What kind of order does it take place in? Do you wait for the book to be published in Turkish first, or do you get cracking really as soon as he's finished the writing, or how does it work out?
It depends on the context. With The Red-Haired Woman, the book was published in Turkish when I started translating it. It had just been published, but I had, you know, a physical copy of it. Whereas with A Strangers in My Mind, I was halfway through translating when Orhan finished writing it. But that is accidental, I think. It's a matter of publishing schedules, really, which change, you know. An author might publish a book a year in his native language even, but in foreign editions, they tend to be more staggered. So that's just really how the timeline works.
And what about the translation itself? I've read Maureen Freely, Pamuk's previous translator. She's spoken before about these kind of long argumentative sessions translating alongside Pamuk on Büyükada, which is an island off Istanbul, kind of arguing over every sentence, really. Do you have a similar kind of process? Do you also work alongside him once the initial draft of the translation is done, or are you kind of more left alone to the work?
No, I work with Orhan very closely. You know, his English is very good, so he is able to read the entire translation and comment on it. I haven't found that it's been too argumentative. Perhaps I've just gotten lucky, but we tend to find something that works at the end of the day, and I sort of feel that in this kind of context, the author usually does know best what it is that they want to say. So unless the suggestion is somehow incorrect, I tend to sort of find that it has merit usually.
What are the kind of main areas of disagreement that come up?
I wouldn't call them areas of disagreement, but you're aware that English has so many more words to express the same or the similar concept than Turkish does. So one of the things that does come up fairly frequently when I talk to Orhan about translation is whether a particular word that maybe is repeated in the Turkish might not be repeated in the English. And as I said, that's, I think, a natural sort of consequence of how the two languages are. Turkish, I suppose, has just slightly narrower vocabulary. And sometimes I feel that's better to change the word if you can. If you can use a synonym, it works better sometimes. Sometimes I disagree and think that actually repetition is not a bad thing necessarily. That perhaps is one of the topics we most discuss.
I've heard that he tries to kind of maintain the Turkish grammatical structure as much as possible. I don't know how many listeners will be familiar with that structure, but basically Turkish comes from a completely different language family than English, originating in Central Asia. So the grammar is completely different, and the way the words and sentences are constructed is completely different. So I just wonder if Pamuk wants to maintain that structure as much as possible, that must be a kind of separate challenge, really. It must be very challenging.
I haven't really gone into such sentence by sentence detail usually within in our conversations. As I said, it tends to be occasional words that may be very significant in that particular page or paragraph that we end up focusing on usually. So I haven't, been in a situation where we looked at a sentence and said, we should really reverse this. We should put the verb at the end because that's how it is in Turkish. I assume that's probably what you're referring to. As a translator, I think it's very important to try and stay as faithful as possible to the structures as well as literally what the text is saying. But there is only so much of that you can do. And at a certain point, if you do too much of it, it just sounds odd in the translated language. So no, I wouldn't say that's been a particular issue.
Yeah, I suppose there's two broad approaches that one could take to translating. I mean, I'm not very experienced in the area, but I suppose on the one hand, you could have a very kind of free translation where it's the translator has the freedom to interpret a text and maybe add things to it. And then on the other hand, there's being kind of very faithful. And in Turkish, it's obviously probably far more difficult to be faithful because the grammatical structure is so different.
Yes, I think actually what you've touched upon is probably one of the biggest debates about translation that there is. And I, like you, I have pretty much no academic background on the subject. What I go by is my preferences as a reader, which are that, when I read a translated text, if possible, I would like to forget that it's a translation. And I'm aware that that in itself is a controversial position. Translated fiction in particular has a merit, a value, I would say, that originates firstly from the fact that it's translated. It's, to sound very cliched, it's a bridge into another world for many people who read it. So to say that, you should forget when you read it that it's a translation almost seems to suggest that that's irrelevant, which obviously it isn't. It is very relevant that it's a foreign text. So when I say, that as a reader I prefer to forget I'm reading a translation, I'm aware that actually that's perhaps oversimplifying things. But at the same time, I do find that when something sounds like it wasn't written in the language that you're reading it in, it can throw you very quickly from what you're reading. At least it can throw me. So my very unacademic and sort of personal approach is to try and ensure that what I do as a translator stays as faithful as possible to the original text, but sounds, or reads rather, like it was almost, could have been written in English.
Yeah, I think you've done a very good job with this latest book for that reason, because it does sound very natural, and the translation doesn't draw attention to itself. At no point do you ever really think this sounds awkward in any way. It sounds very natural. It flows very well.
Thank you.
I suppose as well, this novel, as you alluded to earlier, it's rather different to A Strangeness in My Mind. It's a bit more allegorical, perhaps. It's not such a linear story. And I guess Pamuk, like his career really has shifted around, because it seemed like he was really his best known works. Perhaps My Name is Red and The Black Book, you would say, are again in this kind of allegorical and quite creative mode. But then before this latest novel came out, he seemed to be moving into a kind of more kind of realist direction. And I suppose looking at it crudely and kind of unscientifically, you would imagine that the translation of those earlier books, the kind of more creative allegorical books, would be more difficult to do than the kind of more straightforward realist texts. I don't know if that's actually the case, but I don't know if you have any reflections on that, how the style affects the ease or the difficulty of the translation.
I think you're right to an extent, but I would say that translation in general is really quite difficult, regardless of kind of book it is. And, different modes and tones have their own challenges. It's very true that translating, as you say, quite an allegorical text, as, for example, The Red-Haired Woman, or As It Must Have Been to Translate The Black Book, present their own challenges. But, translating The Strangest in My Mind, really sort of tapping into the sort of emotional landscape of it, making sure that some of that dialogue, which I find is some of the best material in The Strangest in My Mind, making sure that it sounds like real dialogue and not like translated dialogue, that in itself is also very tricky. So yes, I see what you mean, but I would say that it's a difficult task generally. So I wouldn't make too much of a distinction.
Now, I mentioned Maureen Freely earlier, and she got kind of embroiled in a lot of the political controversy that swirled around Pamuk really in the 2000s, when, of course, he won the Nobel Prize for Literature. I mean, do you ever concern yourself about this stuff, or do you try and keep it at arm's length? Pamuk's not so much in the headlines in Turkey as he was around then, but there's still huge interest in him and everything that he says. Do you worry about this stuff, or do you try and keep it at arm's length?
I have no choice but to worry about this stuff because I happen to be Turkish. So all of this has worried me before I started translating Orhan Pamuk's books and will continue to worry me in future. I'm not more worried or more sort of involved or thinking about it more than I was because I'm translating Orhan's books, I would say.
I guess, like, I mean, have you experienced anything, like any particular experiences, like positive or negative around this question?
No, not yet, and I hope not to, but no, I haven't experienced anything in particular in the past few years related to this. That may be because, as you noted earlier, Orhan's maybe less in the news in Turkey as he was than he was maybe 10 years ago, so perhaps I've been lucky so far.
I guess some of the kind of less well-intentioned criticism that you hear of Pamuk in Turkey is that his English translators kind of improve or westernize his words. I mean, what do you make of that criticism? Was that something you were aware of being part of the role before you took on the job?
Yes, I was aware of this kind of comment and criticism that he receives. Obviously, I don't think it has any bearing on the truth. There is no way a translator can improve an author's work without changing it, and changing an author's work is not what a translator really should be doing. The author's role, in my view, perhaps because I'm an agent as well as a translator, I feel that the author's role is really the key role. There's Orhan's work is translated into so many languages. He has translators all over the world. To sort of suggest that he's only popular because his English translators are and have been very good, first of all, is misleading, but also it sort of wipes away all of these other translators who work on his books in Chinese and French and German and Italian and all of those other dozens of languages that he's translated in. And he's popular in throughout the world thanks to his work and to the work that his translators do. So I think there's very much a political element to that criticism that is leveled at him. And because it's political, it tends to be disingenuous.
Yeah, and I suppose another thing is, like, a lot of people in English as well find, you know, him difficult to read and, you know, have similar criticisms about, they say, oh, the writing's not good or whatever, the same kind of criticism that you would get in Turkish. So it's not like he's becoming transformed into this broad popular novelist in English. It's seems like a bit of a disingenuous criticism that's made in Turkey, I think.
Yeah, I think there are certain reasons behind it that have nothing to do with the actual writing and everything to do with positions that he may have expressed in the past that have not gone down very well.
And you mentioned there are other translators into dozens of other languages of his books. I mean, are you in contact with many of those translators, or do you have a kind of a WhatsApp group or something to kind of share difficulties or...?
I've come quite late to the Orhan translation party, I think, so I'm not really in touch with any of the translators, except for his German translator, with whom I had a really pleasant correspondence while we were both translating The Red-Haired Woman, and we agreed that if we ever find ourselves in the same country, we would meet. But it hasn't been a sort of an advice kind of correspondence, and more of a just friendly mutual appreciation.
And you mentioned as well there that you work primarily as an agent, a literary agent. So presumably translating is not your main focus at the moment. I mean, what other irons in the fire do you have? What's your main focus of work really at the moment?
These are really my two irons. I work full-time as a literary agent, and every couple of years, for the past 5 or 6 years, whenever Orhan has written a book, I've just taken some time off work to translate that. So I wish I could go home from the office and translate at night, but that's just not something I can do. I need to take time off and devote myself to the translation, and then go back to work when it's done.
Well, it's a very nice arrangement you've got. what are you working on at the moment? Is there anything, I don't know if Orhan's finished a book yet? Or
he's writing a new book, but I haven't seen a single word of it yet. So we're patiently waiting.
That was Ekin Oklap. Many thanks to her. If you're interested, check out an earlier Turkey Book Talk episode from last year with Maureen Freely, in which we discussed her translation of Madonna in a Fur Coat by Sabahattin Ali, as well as his life and work. I'll put a link up at armstrongwilliam.wordpress.com, or you can just Google it. Don't forget, Turkey Book Talk listeners can support the podcast and get a 33% discount plus free delivery by purchasing any one of 5 great books from Hearst Publishers as part of a special offer. To check out the books available, visit the special page created for the deal, hearstpublishers.bigcartel.com. Another way to support the podcast is via my Patreon account, making a small or large pledge on a per-episode basis. Many thanks to my current Patreon supporters, Celia Jocelyn Kerslake, Michelle Zimmer, Gianmarcus Vommel, Steve Bryant, Aaron Atterman, Max Hoffman, Andrew McDowell, and Paul Levin. Also, please do rate or review Turkey Book Talk on whatever platform you listen on, which really does help increase awareness of it for other potential listeners. Follow via Twitter or like the Facebook page to stay updated with new episodes, and email recommendations, feedback, or abuse to williamjohnarmstrong@gmail.com. But until our next episode in a couple of weeks, thank you very much for listening.